Here it is!
From deep inside your radio.
Harry, I don't have to listen to your phone calls to know what you're doing.
Thanks very much, Vice President Joe Biden. It's reassuring. Ladies and gentlemen, what the frack? What the frack? France's Constitutional Council this week rejected a challenge to a law banning hydraulic fracking for exploration and production of the country's shale gas and oil. So that would be the end of that in France. No fracking in France. Pas de fracking. The ruling is a boost for the president, who's opposed the technology, to the dismay of some allies. U.S.-based Schupak Energy had challenged on four counts a ban introduced in 2011 due to potential risks to the environment, which led to two of the exploration permits being canceled in southern France. The Constitutional Council is made up of judges and former French presidents. The International Energy Agency says France has some of the most plentiful underground reserves of shale gas. However, fracking was banned under former President Sarkozy on grounds it could pollute groundwater and trigger earthquakes. That's silly, Sarkozy, bringing to a halt the nascent shale oil and gas industry. Dans la France! And Chesapeake Energy's, well, Serenity 1-3 near Oklahoma City came in a gusher in 2009, pumping more than 1,200 barrels of oil a day and kicking off a rush to drill that extended into Kansas. Now the well produces less than 100 barrels a day. The swift decline of that well sheds light on a dirty secret of the oil boom, according to Bloomberg Businessweek. It may not last. Shale wells start strong and fade fast. Producers are drilling at a breakneck pace to hold output steady. In the oil fields, this incessant need to drill is known as the Red Queen, after the character in Through the Looking Glass who tells Alice, "It takes all the running you can do to keep in the same place." Whether current production can hold up is the subject of debate. David Hughes, a geoscientist and president of Global Sustainability Research, has examined the lifespan of shale wells. The Red Queen syndrome just gets worse and worse and worse, he says. The higher production goes, the more wells you need to offset the decline. But in the meantime, you've done some nice stuff to the water and the land. Residents near the Marcellus shale gas field in Pennsylvania have long been wondering whether their water is safe to drink. A new study from Duke University is likely to further inflame those fears. Geochemists have found dangerous levels of radioactivity and salinity at a fracking disposal site, which feeds into water sources for Pittsburgh and other western Pennsylvania cities. This, according to Business Insider, the Duke scientists spent 2 years taking soil samples upstream and downstream from the Josephine Brine treatment facility. You remember Josephine Brine. She was a singer in the 30s. What they found was striking. Even after wastewater was treated at the plant to remove dangerous chemicals, radiation was detected far above regulated levels. What do they think they are? Fook. The treated water had radium levels 200 times greater than control water from the area, according to Avner Vengosh, one of the primary authors of the study. In addition, the team found high levels of bromide in the water, a particularly alarming development. Drinking water plants use chlorine and ozone to turn river water into drinking water. When those chemicals react with bromide, though, they produce highly toxic byproducts. It's yet to happen in this particular spot, according to Vengosh, but it is a dangerous possibility. The wastewater involved is a byproduct of fracking. The wastewater is a highly saline and radioactive fluid that returns to the surface during the fracking process. Each day, oil and gas producers generate 1 billion gallons of wastewater, according to another Duke professor. They produce more wastewater than hydrocarbons, he says. That's the broader implication of this study. We have to do something with this wastewater. Well, since we learned this week, ladies and gentlemen, that all the water on Earth came from asteroids in the solar system, I think we know what we do with the wastewater. Build an asteroid. It's payback time. And now, Dick Cheney is ready to laugh about waterboarding. Conservatives gathered at the Plaza Hotel in Manhattan Monday night to roast the former vice president at an event where many of the biggest laugh lines touched on waterboarding and other controversial policies of the key architect of the war on terror. The gathering was hosted by Commentary Magazine. Figures there included Don Rumsfeld, the former Attorney General Mike Mukasey, Senator Joe Lieberman, who said it's something to the effect that it's nice we're all here at the plaza instead of in cages after some war crimes trial. The event was sponsored by Rupert Murdoch and other top conservatives. Two attendees said the edgy jokes were in the appropriate spirit of a roast. A third told BuzzFeed he found them in poor taste, even in that setting. The dinner was punctuated by a live performance of Yiddish songs. There were some waterboarding jokes that were really tasteless, one guest said. Cheney himself told one waterboarding joke, which he attributed to Jay Leno. It centered on a one-shot antelope hunting contest in Wyoming in which the loser had to dance with an Indian squaw. Cheney's shot got caught in the barrel, producing a dispute over whether it counted as a hit or miss. And Cheney said that Leno said that Cheney wanted to go catch the animal with his bare hands and waterboard it. You laughing yet? Dear former vice president, it's funnier when you're not the one who approved the torture, as should be obvious in a moment. Hello, welcome to the show.
Well, it may not be legal, but it sure as heck makes me safer. And it may not yield useful intel, at least that's what they say. It's a pleasure so rare, seeing captives gulp air. Let's go waterboarding, USA. Let's go. It's not torture if I say it ain't. Those conventions are so old. Surfing, 'cause you can't get off if you want to. And it's really hard work, but for us it feels much more like play. If the tables were turned, we'd feel really burned. But let's go water.
From London, England, home of Londoners, I'm Harry Shearer, welcoming you to this edition of Le Show. And now, ladies and gentlemen,
I guess I'm just lucky so-and-so.
Some love it, some hate it. That's the controversial nature of this relatively new feature on the broadcast, in which we spotlight the increasing habit of folks, male and female, distinguished and not so, erudite and ordinary, to answer questions posed by interviewers, to begin their answers with the word so, as if they're coming to some conclusion when actually they're just opening the pack. So here we go with yet another example. This from the head of a hedge fund called PIMCO, Mohammed El Aryan, in a discussion with some folks, I think, at Bloomberg on the impending debt ceiling problem. Enjoy.
Is there a risk that China could sell?
So there isn't a risk that they would sell because, remember, you cannot replace something with nothing.
Mohammed, project out, if you will, what might happen if America does crash through this debt barrier. What could happen next?
So we've done lots of scenarios.
And the fact that President Obama has not nominated somebody to fill this position yet, how risky is that?
So it's risky.
Why should we have confidence that any central banker has a good crystal ball?
So clearly they don't.
How far down that path are we?
So we are a little bit down that path, but we can reclaim quickly the credibility.
But the government is still shut down. That's not much better.
So the impact of the shutdown is both temporary and reversible.
How do you move forward so polarized?
So I asked that question in D.C. I was there yesterday.
I guess if you say so, I'll have to pack my things and go.
That's right.
That's right. Mohammed, the head of PIMCO, one of the nation's largest hedge funds, heading a SoFest today here on Lisso. And now, ladies and gentlemen, news of the Olympic movement. Produced by Jim Ebersol Jr. Athletes and spectators attending the Winter Olympics in Sochi will face some of the most invasive and systematic spying and surveillance in the history of the Olympic Games. This, according to documents shared with the newspaper The Guardian, Russia's powerful FSB Security Service, that's the successor to the KGB, and KGB-FM, plans to ensure that no communication by competitors or spectators goes unmonitored during the games. This is according to a dossier compiled by a team of Russian investigative journalists looking into preparations for the 2014 games. In a ceremony in Red Square last week, President Putin held the Olympic flame aloft, saying Russia and its people had always been imbued with the qualities of openness and friendship, making Sochi the perfect destination for the Olympics. But government procurement documents and documents from Russian communications companies indicate that the newly installed telephone and internet spying capabilities will give the FSB free rein to intercept any telephone or data traffic and even track the use of sensitive words or phrases mentioned in emails, web chats, and in social media. Who do they think they are, the NSA? The journalists who are experts on the Russian security services, Andrei Soldatov and Irina Boragan, collated dozens... I hope they've got good security. Collated dozens of open-source technical documents as well as public records. They found that major amendments have been made to telephone and Wi-Fi networks in the Black Sea Resort to ensure extensive and all-permeating monitoring and filtering of all traffic using SORM, Russia's system for intercepting phone and internet communications. SORM was directed to be updated in 2010. It was specified that should be done in secret. SORM 1 captures telephone and mobile phone communications. SORM 2 intercepts internet traffic. And SORM 3 collects information from all forms of communication. Since 2010, Russian authorities have been busy making sure that SWORM equipment is properly installed in Sochi. Several local ISPs were fined when it was discovered they had failed to install Omega, the SWORM device recommended by the FSB. Visitors determined to take their laptops and smartphones to Sochi may think their communications are safe thanks to sophisticated encryption provided by Google and Facebook. They are likely to be wrong. Your communications are ours. The Olympics, it's a movement, and we all need one every day. On a related issue, Skype is being investigated by Luxembourg's Data Protection Commissioner over concerns about its involvement, its secret involvement, with the NSA spy program PRISM. That's the one that the Guardian newspaper revealed thanks to the documents stolen, liberated, you choose the verb, by Edward Snowden. Skype could potentially face criminal and administrative sanctions in Luxembourg, including a ban on passing users' communications covertly to the U.S. NSA. Skype is headquartered in Luxembourg. Well, that's convenient for tax purposes, isn't it? Even though it's owned by Microsoft, it could be fined if an investigation concludes the data sharing is found in violation of the country's data protection laws. The country's data protection chief, yeah, they got one of those. Isn't that wild? But they don't have a Secretary of Agriculture, though. He declined to comment for the story in The Guardian, as did Microsoft. Strange, because Microsoft is usually so forthcoming. Luxembourg has attracted several large corporations, including Amazon and Netflix, due to its tax structure, don't you know? But its constitution enshrines the right to privacy. Oh, come on. Really? And states that secrecy of correspondence is inviolable unless the law provides otherwise. Surveillance of communications in Luxembourg can only occur with judicial approval. Yeah, but are secret judges okay for that? We'll find out. It's unclear whether Skype's transfer of communications to the NSA have been sanctioned by Luxembourg through a secret legal assistance of data transfer agreement that would not be known to the Data Protection Commissioner. When Microsoft acquired Skype, some types of data flow to NSA tripled. Isn't that wild? This is according to top secret documents seen by The Guardian. And Microsoft bought Skype for $8.5 billion. That was the first technology group to be brought within the initiative known as PRISM. Once considered a secure chat tool beyond the reach of government eavesdropping, Skype is now facing a backlash in the wake of the PRISM revelations. So there you go. When you tick off Luxembourg, ladies and gentlemen, you've waked the sleeping giant. Don't poke that tiger in the nose. So just a few words, just a very few words. On the subject that's getting way too many words this weekend and this week in the United States, the subject of the debt ceiling. Ladies and gentlemen, do you know, if you want to talk about American exceptionalism, and Americans appear to want to, here's an area where I think, I know, we stand almost alone. That's right. There's only one other country in the world that has a ceiling, a legislative ceiling, on its national debt. You'd think everybody would, wouldn't you, from the way it's being talked about? No, it's us and Denmark. Everybody else gets along without one. How do they do that? Volume. No, all right, I'll talk slower. The United States is the only country in the world, except for Denmark, to have a debt ceiling, a ceiling on its national debt. Makes you proud. U.S. And of course we have it because it's in our Constitution thanks to the founders? No! We didn't have a debt ceiling until 1917. We did okay, I guess we did okay with that one, but we're doing so much better now, right? And what, 80%, 90% of our national debt is held by China, and that is reason, no. Of the 16 trillion, trillion? Something like that. I think China has 1/16. But aside from that, they're all, everything you hear is correct. Oh, and by the way, the deficit has been going down. And now, ladies and gentlemen, the apologies of the week. It's been going down because there's the recession.
We're so sorry.
But still. Dateline Warsaw. A top official in Poland's Catholic Church has apologized for a comment he made about pedophilia by priests. But he said he did not mean to suggest that child victims were partially responsible. At a hastily called news conference this week, Archbishop Joseph Michalik, the head of the Conference of the Episcopate, said, "I am sorry for this misunderstanding." Earlier in the day, he had made an off-the-cuff comment to reporters about recent cases of pedophilia by Polish priests. He had said that a child from a troubled family, quote, seeks closeness with others and may get lost and may get the other person involved, too, unquote. But now he's sorry for the misunderstanding, you see. Tommy Robinson has apologized for spreading fear among British Muslims following his departure from the English Defense League earlier this week. Robinson, whose real name is Stephen Yaxley Lennon, said, I'm sorry for calling Islam a fascist and violent religion and for having blamed every single Muslim for getting away with the bombings on July 7th, 2007. In an interview with The Guardian, Robinson said he wanted to apologize for creating a culture of us and them and for issuing controversial race-led comments throughout his time as leader of the organization. The EDL was founded in 2009 by Robinson and co-founder Kevin Carroll, who also dramatically quit this week. "I apologize for creating that fear," said Robinson. "But there's fear in my house, too." A preview of what's come to come in news about the atom. Dateline Tokyo, the owners of Japan's damaged Fukushima nuclear plant, TEPCO, have apologized after several workers at the site were accidentally doused with highly radioactive water this week. Authorities do not believe they were exposed to a health risk, but the accident is the latest in a series that have called into question TEPCO's sanity. So TEPCO apologized. Dateline The Hague, the Dutch foreign minister apologized to Moscow this week for the detention of a Russian diplomat in The Hague, saying his right to diplomatic immunity had been violated. Russian embassy officials said Dutch police entered the diplomat's home, beat him with a baton, and illegally detained him for several hours last weekend. President Putin had demanded a Dutch apology for the incident. Is that a certain kind of an apology, a Dutch apology? Is it like Chinese whispers? Moscow and The Hague are already at odds over the detention in Russia of Greenpeace activists, two of whom are Dutch citizens. Fox News host Anna Kuiman apologized last week for reporting a story as news that actually originated on a satirical site. The co-host of Fox and Friends Saturday was talking about the government shutdown when she said President Obama had offered to personally pay for a museum of Muslim culture, while the Republican National Committee was willing to pay to keep war memorials open. "It really doesn't seem fair, especially," she said. That was a fake news story about Obama offering to personally pay to keep the International Museum of Muslim Culture open. Kuiman tweeted out an apology. "Just met with producers. I made a mistake yesterday after receiving flawed research. My apologies won't happen again." Dateline New Delhi. Organizers of Miss Universe extended their deepest apologies to India over a photo shoot of the Taj Mahal that triggered a police case and accusations that she disrespected the famed monument to love. Miss Universe Olivia Culpo, a 21-year-old American from Rhode Island, visited the Islamic mausoleum during a 10-day tour of India. During her time at the World Heritage Site, she posed for cameras with branded shoes. Police filed a case because any advertising or promotional work is banned at the Taj Mahal. Miss Universe organization would like to extend its deepest apologies to the people of India for the incident involving the reigning Miss Universe, said a statement. It said Kulpa was making a video diary for fans. As part of these videos, we sometimes incorporate sponsors into these shoots, it said, adding the footage was not meant for commercial purposes. So why do you incorporate sponsors? Oh, just as a thing. Quote, we sincerely apologize for any unintentional harm our indiscretion and insensitivity may have caused. Ended the statement from the Miss Universe pageant. A soccer coach from Panama, Julio Deli Valdez, apologized for a joke he made about the Mexican players prior to a World Cup qualifier between the two countries. The two teams are tied. Both need a victory to advance. I do not make one apology, but thousands of apologies from whomever I offended with my joke, Deli Valdez said. He was referring to the presence of naturalized players from Argentina on the Mexican team. He said, will they be singing the national anthem of Mexico or Argentina? That's a Cheney-level joke. He said he never wanted to offend those born in Mexico who will be at the game or those who have been naturalized. Well, who does he want to offend then? An Air China official addressed passenger complaints from October 6th that the beef-filled buns offered on Flight 1268 were expired. According to the official, there was a mix-up with the frozen food packaging bags. Air China has apologized and prepared to send a batch of beef-filled buns to authorities for inspection. Brazil's Truth Commission, it's so nutty to have a thing like that, has apologized for the government's racist maltreatment and detention of its large Japanese community during the Second World War. There's a trend here. Didn't Canada just apologize for that? In a step that could open the way to compensation claims. Uh-oh. 25 years after similar steps by the U.S., the move to make amends has been welcomed by groups representing the 1.5 million migrants and second and third generation descendants to Brazil, who make up the biggest ethnically Japanese population outside of, yes, Japan. Thousands of families were arrested or deported as potential spies or collaborators after Brazil declared war on Japan in 1942. What were you waiting for, Brazil? The government also closed hundreds of Japanese schools, seized communications equipment, and forced the relocation of Japanese who lived close to the coastline. Survivors have testified about the use of torture. I think Dick Cheney would find that amusing. And the degrading loyalty tests to which Brazilian Japanese were forced to step on an image of Emperor Hirohito, who was then considered a deity in his country. The Truth Commission saw video testimony of survivors and their children, including one who said his father was arrested and tortured, along with other prisoners. The commission made a formal apology and will include their findings in a report to the government, which will include other infringements of human rights in modern Brazilian history. That's so wild you would do that. Move along. That's looking backward, not forward. Dateline Detroit Chief Financial Officer Jim Bonsall, who publicly apologized Thursday for offending co-workers in a recent meeting, has been put on paid suspension. I apologize and I'm sorry for having offended co-workers over comments I made in a recent meeting, Bonsall said in a statement. Regardless of the outcome of the internal investigation or whether I keep my job as a result of it, it was never my intention to offend anyway. Or anyone, sorry. This was in response to a treasurer, Cheryl Johnson, the city treasurer, who is black and was demoted as the finance director to city treasurer. She's alleging that Bonsall, who is white, had made racially charged comments. Her letter said her demotion is related to her disclosing that he's created the hostile work environment and subjecting us to ethnic harassment, according to her letter. The incident occurred while Johnson was informing Bonsall about how city appointees traditionally patrol neighborhoods during the three-day Angels Night. Bonsall asked if he could ride with a Detroit police officer. Johnson said he could ride with a family member or friend. Bonsall stated he wouldn't subject his family to that and then asked, quote, can I shoot someone in a hoodie, unquote. Attendees at the 2013 New York Comic Con this week found out they were sending tweets about the event without their knowledge. The organization has since apologized and shut down the service. The Polish Bishops' Conference has actually apologized for the sexual abuse of children by the clergy. The pedophilia problem is appearing in schools, sports clubs, stadiums, and facilities for education and upbringing, but also, it pains us to admit, in church circles. The bishop said, "We apologize for those clergy who have harmed children and are doing everything in our power so such situations are not repeated in the future." And the bishops criticized media coverage of the abuse scandal. A day after the Los Angeles Unified School District released two claims accusing him of harassment, school board president Richard Vladovic admitted this week he'd violated the district's civility policy and apologized to employees who felt intimidated by him. Vladovic said he sought professional help for anger issues. "I did get upset at people," he said. "I did tell them things I shouldn't have told them. There's a better way," unquote. This is, by the way, the same school district which is spending multiple millions giving every student supposedly in the district iPads while musical instruments sit unrepaired in the school district's warehouse and kids in music class don't have instruments to play. More to apologize for, you'd think. The Hawaii Health Connector has apologized for delays in implementing the health insurance exchange created as a result of the Affordable Care Act. The prepared statement sent to the media did not elaborate on what is causing the delay. And the chief executive of AIG, remember them, the big insurance company we had to bail out? Robert Benmosh met with Elijah Cummings, a congressperson, to apologize for comparing the outrage over employee bonuses paid by the bailed out insurer to lynchings. Benmosh told the Wall Street Journal last month that the uproar over bonuses, quote, was intended to stir public anger to get everybody out there with their pitchforks and their hangman nooses and all that, sort of like what we did in the Deep South, unquote. "In our meeting, I apologized for my reference to the South and the impact that it had on Representative Cummings and others," Benmosh said in a statement. "I explained I was responding to a reporter's question about certain actions I felt were wrong at the time of the financial crisis." Benmosh has previously apologized for the statement, so this would be now the second one. The apologies of the week, ladies and gentlemen, a copyrighted feature of this broadcast. And apropos of bonuses, to bankers. I said bankers.
My baby was a wicked traitor, brains of a gamer, balls of a blader. Forbes called him a financial Darth Vader. Don't mean maybe, that was my baby. The credit default swaps, CDOs, what the hell they were, my baby knows. Sure they collapse, but his wealth grows. Avoiding the onus, just banking his bonus. He's my bonus baby.
Protecting his daisy.
me drink. I'm in the green, he's in the pink. To the moon he's flown us, thanks to his bonus. They bailed out his firm to keep it on track, and someone upstairs was a blade smoking crack. Now they want baby to give his box back, but it's balls that he's shown us, he's keeping his bonus. He's my bonus baby.
This is Le Show, and this week, the Nobel Peace Prize did not go to Tom?
Malala.
It did not go to Tom?
Malala.
That's right. It went to the organization that is the watchdog for getting rid of chemical weapons around the world. And as we learned that progress has been made, actually, the first steps in... getting rid of serious chemical weapons have been taken. At that same time, and apropos of winning the Nobel Peace Prize, the head of the chemical weapons watchdog issued a statement which included this comment.
Certain states have not observed the deadline, which was April 2012, for destroying their chemical weapons. This applies especially to the United States and Russia.
Had you heard that anywhere else? I hadn't. Nutty, he picks on us after he gets Obama's prize. And now, news of AFPAC. The selfsame aforementioned Malala. Tom?
Malala.
Malala. Says her country is being devastated by opium addiction, injustice against women, and continued presence of the United States and NATO forces propping up a corrupt, quote, puppet regime.
Malala said that?
That's right. Who did?
Malala.
She spoke of severe punishment for women and said, even though by speaking out, Afghan women risk death or end up going into hiding, it is our duty to speak out. She said Monday, marking the 12th anniversary of the occupation of Afghanistan by the, quote, big powers. They have been bloody years, she said, during which the violence and crime have been directed mostly at women and children. She added, quote, no nation can liberate another nation. It has to come from within the nation. Dismissing the announcement that U.S. and allied troops will leave the country as a political gimmick to deceive the American people. Well, no wonder she didn't win the Peace Prize, talking like that. Good Lord. President Karzai appeared on a British television news program called Newsnight. He criticized NATO for failing to bring stability to Afghanistan in over a decade there. The entire NATO exercise was one that caused Afghanistan a lot of suffering, a lot of loss of life, and no gains because the country is not secure, quoting President Karzai. He said NATO incorrectly focused the fight on Afghan villages rather than Taliban safe havens in Pakistan, our friend. What we wanted was absolute security and a clear-cut war against terrorism, he said. There's partial security. He said his government is actually actively engaged in talks with the Taliban. He said the return of the Taliban will not undermine progress. However, one of the reasons that there is tension between Afghanistan, renewed tension between Afghanistan and the United States, as revealed in the weekend's talks between President Karzai and Secretary of State John Kerry, who made an unannounced trip to Kabul to talk with Karzai, is that the United States captured Latif Masood, an influential Pakistani Taliban commander. He was captured by U.S. forces. Afghan government officials said that they had spent months trying to recruit Masood as an interlocutor for peace talks. And he was forcibly taken into American custody while he was being transported to a facility controlled by Afghan's National Security Directorate. A Karzai spokesman called it a major breach of sovereignty. And guess who's running for president in Afghanistan? We told you last week, Zalmay Khalilzad, the former U.S. ambassador to Afghanistan. But now, add another hat to the ring. Another brother of Hamid Karzai. Kayum Karzai. He's got a considerable resume. He owns a restaurant in Baltimore, Maryland. He owns a construction company that does a lot of business in southern Afghanistan. He was one of the rare candidates who signed up without any Mujahideen leaders on his ticket. "We are the clean team," said another Karzai brother, Mahmoud, who's closely involved in Kayum's campaign. He hopes to win the votes of ethnic Uzbeks. So he's going for the Uzbek vote. That's how it looks from over here. How does it look from over there?
From Afghanistan Public Radio, recommending you enjoy your driveway moments inside your house.
From the newly refortified Presidential Palace in downtown Kabul, the city that always sleeps. I'm Mahmoud.
And I'm Hamid. We're Tick and Talk, the running out of time brothers. Welcome to Karzai Talk. Today's program comes to you with the assistance of the Afghan Election Board, assuring free and fair elections since sometime late next year.
Speaking of elections, my brother, Isn't it always the Americans who are telling us that elections have consequences?
Yes, but they forget to tell us that one of the consequences is that the government shuts down.
They have so much to teach us about democracy.
And so little time. As a matter of fact, our American friends may be pulling all their people out next year.
They're just saying that.
Unless we make certain concessions to them. Mm-hmm.
Yes, they want half the proceeds of our next two pledge drives.
What's half of nothing? Hello, you're on Karzai Talk.
Hello, I'm John, a long-time unannounced visitor, first-time caller.
Well, Mr. Secretary, so good to hear from you so soon after we failed to reach an agreement.
Well, if I didn't talk to people I didn't agree with, Hamid, I'd never talk to anybody.
Including your wife?
Especially my wife.
He really is married.
I was just calling to reiterate that I hope there are no hard feelings about us arresting someone with whom you were trying to conduct peace talks, but we thought was a bad guy.
Mr. Secretary, I know my brother wouldn't say this, but in this country, everybody's a bad guy.
John, as I said in our meeting, mm-hmm. I hope there are no hard feelings about us, wanting a guarantee that you'll protect us in case of attack.
Well, Hamid, not only are there no hard feelings about that, there are no feelings about that.
Well, you can't ask for less than that.
Well, I imagine you are just about to make your unannounced departure.
I already have. I'm calling from the plane.
How unannounced can you be?
Thanks for the call.
Very nice, man.
Indeed. We get many gifts, of course.
Of course, goes with the territory.
But until John, no one had ever brought us two pallet loads of ketchup. Hello, you're on Karzai Talk.
Hello, I'm time Kalyum, long time older brother, first time caller.
Ah, this is the wonderful thing about public radio. Mm-hmm. It brings families together. Kalyum, aren't you being a little modest about all of your accomplishments?
Yes, as a matter of fact, I'm very proud of my modesty.
Well, I happen to know that you own a fine Afghan restaurant in the Baltimore area.
And you also have quite a portfolio of media properties here in southern Afghanistan. Mm-hmm. You're kind of the Kandahar Rupert Murdoch.
Except I choose my wives more carefully.
But now, if I'm not mistaken, and I better not be because I'm president, you are running to succeed me, aren't you, Kayum?
Well, I thought that the time had come for me to take what I'd learned running my businesses, including my construction company, and apply it to government.
Meaning, so you can cut out the middleman and just give the contracts to yourself.
Don't you
see? That's the bitterness of a brother who's stuck selling Toyotas to people who don't have to buy them.
Yeah. Well, maybe we should bypass the sibling issues and find out if you have a question for us, since that's what the format calls for. Mm.
The format also calls for us to be entertaining, and we've ignored that for 7 years.
Oh, no. Well, I guess my question is whether you think the up-armored Humvee is the appropriate vehicle for me to ride in on the occasion of my inauguration, or do you think, given the security challenges, I might need something a little more robust?
Well, dear older brother, if I may, there is the little detail of winning the election first.
Oh, if I know Kayum, he's got a very strong get-out-the-vote campaign.
Are we doing indeed? It's already being beta-tested in South Kandahar. Mm. It's called get-out-the-vote or get-out. Our focus group work tells us people really do prefer to stay in their homes.
Well, all other things being equal, Kayum, I think a bubble-top, Bradley-armored vehicle might be the right choice for your inaugural motorcade. You will be planning a motorcade?
Well, some kind of cade, just for the pump of it.
I think I can get you a deal on a Bradley armored vehicle, Kayum, or at least a Toyota Roadrunner that looks like one.
And Hamid, my younger brother,
yes,
as your presidential term comes to a constitutionally mandated end.
And we know what that's worth.
How do you see your future playing out?
Lots of bodyguards, of course.
More bodyguards than at a Kanye West video shoot.
But seriously, I look forward to continuing to help my people and to spending less time with my family.
So basically, you'd like to buy my place in Maryland?
Well, I'd like to do some teaching, some consulting, to draw on my wide range of international contacts.
Basically, he wants to be Tony Blair in a green robe.
Well, who doesn't?
Only Bill Clinton.
Well, of course, Kayum, just know that as a brother of the host brothers, you're welcome here at any time up through the election.
After which we can only hope we are welcome here. Thanks for the call.
We had help today from the Afghan Heritage Foundation, a think tank for the rest of us.
Legal services for Karzai Talk come from the law firm of Ketchum & Newcomb. I'm Hamid.
And I'm Mahmoud. Join us again for another edition of Karzai Talk.
This is APR, Afghanistan Public Radio.
Open up the window, see the AC, free from the grips of the humidity. Time to trade your shorts for jeans. It's autumn in New Orleans. Just like the springtime without the bugs. Breezes as gentle as grandma's hugs. Streets start filling up with tourists and teens. Autumn in New Orleans. Saints back playing, Magnolia swaying, shaking off the last spring's beams. Party time beginning, Saints keep winning. Who knows where this thing leads? Second line starts snaking up and down the street. Glove hands clapping to the dancing feet. Friday night fish fries, white limousines, autumn in New Orleans. Ghost to a romancing, in your thought dancing. Soon enough the fine fires burn. So goodbye to grilling, indoors is willing. Fix up a mess of red beans. Welcome back the autumn to old New Orleans. Old New Orleans.
And now, ladies and gentlemen, news of the atom.
Claim, say.